Hey everyone, it's your host of See Jurassic Right, Stephen Ray Morris here, just dropping in to say I hope you've been enjoying all the new episodes in 2023 and 2024 so far. There are new interviews with filmmakers, musicians, scientists, the screenwriter of Land Before Time, audio essays about the rich history of the Jurassic Park and Jurassic World franchise, and all the news about the upcoming animated show Jurassic World Chaos Theory, and the as-of-yet-untitled Jurassic World sequel coming next summer. I really need your help supporting the show right now, and you can do that by leaving a tip and or giving a monthly follow on Patreon, patreon.com/seejurassicright. There are $1 and $5 tiers, but more is coming. Sharing the show, giving 5-star reviews in Apple Podcasts, and liking and commenting on social, at Stephen Ray Morris on Instagram and Twitter, goes a long way to help boosting the show's visibility again online in this new era. I'm an independent podcaster, and your support is so important and means the world to me in keeping this podcast running. Link to the Patreon is in the show notes. Hold on to your butts. Thank you, and now on to the show.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Filled with awe and fright, see Jurassic Right. Bathe in amber light, see Jurassic Right. Jurassic ride, see 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 Jurassic Park.
Woo! Let's go.
Hello.
Hello.
This is weird doing it in person.
I know. I mean, you know her, you love her. And I've been trying to pronounce your name correctly on so many podcasts in the last year, but it's Andrea Cioffalo.
Yay!
You're back. In person.
You're back. You're here.
Yeah. That's right. True. I'm visiting. I'm very excited because when the last time we talked, was that before? It was after we went to the Field Museum together, right?
Yes, it was.
Yes. And then we're going tomorrow. Again, yes. We're doing it backwards. I'm missing out on a Magic the Gathering tournament because I'm bad at planning. But and you'll hear some dinosaurs in the background, I think. It might be. You might hear some of your...
They can get pretty loud, so it's
Wait,
possible.
And you have a pigeon right now, too.
Yes, I do.
Which one? What is her name?
His name's Oyster. That's the one that you pet last time you were here.
Oh, he's still here.
Yeah, okay. He's still here.
Okay. Yeah, you foster pigeons, and you were just in the newspaper.
Yes, just the digital copy, but still, it's fun.
Yeah. Wait, we'll talk about that.
Okay.
Because we talked about, oh my God, what's this? The sweet pan flute boy, the pigeon that you were.
Oh, Potsticker.
Potsticker,
yes.
Yeah. Who has been adopted since the
yes,
last time we talked.
Yes, he is. I occasionally will see updates, and it makes my day. He's doing very good.
Yes, you were. There's been a lot of pigeon rescue talk in Chicago lately.
Yes. So the Tribune interviewed the founder of Great Lakes Pigeon Rescue, where I volunteer and foster from, and they also went to the home of one of the other fosters that works with the organization. Because she has, I can't remember how many she had at the time, but she has a ton of pigeons at her house currently. And they also talked to someone from the Field Museum about pigeons in this article. And then they came to the rescue on one of the days that I was there. So I'm in a few of the photos, the digital article, which was kind of exciting.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's really cool. And it made front page.
Yeah, it's very
which,
exciting.
Which, like, I have a copy upstairs. We want to see it. Yeah, which I wasn't expecting. I thought it was going to be, like, Like, I knew it was going to be, like, a fairly in-depth article, but I wasn't expecting it to be, like, the main article of that day. So that was pretty cool that people are talking about it.
Yeah.
And how, you know, whether you like it or not, pigeons are here to stay. And hopefully it paints them in a better light, because I know they don't get the greatest reputation. A lot of people call them rats with wings, which I don't think is very fair.
I would say seagulls are actually much more...
They're vicious too.
Yeah. Well, and I feel like, as far as, you know, even just sort of coming around to the idea that birds are not the idea, but the knowledge or theory or however you want to, you know, scientifically describe it, but just, you know, that birds are dinosaurs, and that's very exciting and fun, because mm-hmm. then birds are obviously cool regardless of that. But then I think it's like sharks, you know, where, like, I recently was just very, like, thinking about the idea that, like, sharks have had such a redemption arc in our lifetimes, because, like, our parents growing up and when Jaws came out, like, the author of Jaws has, like, come to regret the whole thing, because he's just like, oh, like, people hate sharks now because of me. Like, and he's, and I think probably similarly, I'm sure you've found with, like, pigeons, where it's like, oh, yeah, like, pigeons are great, but yet they've been kind of, like, I think about, like, the pigeon lady in Home Alone, and just, like, representation hasn't been great in the media for pigeons. And I feel like in the last few years, it's definitely, like, the shifting sands of like, what, of, like, wait, why did we demonize this animal, you know?
Yeah, I, like, and I kind of compare that to, like, possums, too, because I've noticed that a lot, there's a lot more talk about possums and how, like, I know a lot of people, you know, in the past, don't find them very appealing because they're kind of weird looking and they think they carry disease or whatever. But I feel like online, like, they kind of have, like, a renaissance alongside the pigeons.
Yeah.
Where people are like, no, these are really cool animals. There's, like, nothing wrong with them. Like, we should appreciate them. And that's really cool. And it's amazing that the Tribune put out an article like that, because I hopefully gets more people talking. And I know WGN, the news station out here, did. On their on the radio, they did they brought back the same guy from the Field Museum that was interviewed for the article. They brought him onto their radio show, and he talked for maybe like 15 minutes about pigeons. So it's generating conversation.
Yeah,
which is cool.
I also am distracted by the goose wearing the dinosaur costume.
Oh my god!
You.
We still need to get sand for him.
Wait, what is this? This is like a...
It's like a porch goose.
Yes, a porch goose.
But it's got, like, outfits.
Yeah.
Chris got it for me for Christmas. So he's got his dinosaur costume, and then I have, like, a pumpkin costume for him. But it's just, like, plastic, so we have to fill him with sand still before we put him outside. Otherwise, he's going to blow away.
Oh, okay.
So now he's for the last, like, 2 months, he's just been chilling.
Hanging out behind
me,
you guys watch TV.
Yeah, and I kind of forget that he's there.
Well, is that a Midwest thing? Because comedian Kurt Braunhaller... he also had a porch goose that he would dress up and stuff, and it was sort of a tribute to his mom. And I thought that was just like a thing very specific to him, but then I feel like it's a thing, right?
Yeah, no, I don't know if it's, I would assume that maybe it's more of like a Midwest thing, but I mean, I remember when I was little, we had little like goose statues at like my childhood house. We didn't dress them up, but I like distinctly remember us having like this like big stone painted goose, and I think they were little like baby ones too. But yeah.
I love that. It's fun, because I feel like I'm trying to think, like, we didn't have anything like fun in my yard growing up. We had like a cactus that would like bloom occasionally, like at night. That was very exciting.
That is very cool.
But, you know, we had a very like boring mailbox. Although it's funny, because when my dad lives in Florida now, and like there's so many manatee mailboxes and dolphins, and it's just like every I don't know. It's your yard. You should, you know.
Yeah.
You want some character to it.
Yeah, I'm excited to. There, I was looking at more outfits for him for the spring. Actually, like 2 days ago. So soon I will have this goose on our porch.
Again, I'm in Chicago right now, and it's snowing right now, which is very exciting to me.
Yeah, it snowed just for you. I was not expecting snow today.
No, it was like perfectly sunny. You know, I was down over by like closer to like the downtown of the Loop area and stuff, and it was just like beautifully sunny. And then
it was like coming down a lot too. It was like
Hopefully I can get back
yeah
later.
Hey, you just stay here.
But we're here to talk, because you've been on before, sort of generally talking about art and your Jurassic, because you had a Jurassic Park birthday last year.
Yes.
But we're here specifically to talk about Charles R. Knight. And we talked a little bit about the field last time, but just as a refresher, like what, like when did you, because you've been going to the field since you were a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And what were the murals like? Oh, do you have like a memory of like the first time you saw his murals and stuff?
I mean, I was very, very little the first time I went to the Field Museum. So probably kind of like with the Jurassic Park, I was very little when it came out and probably the first time I saw it. So I don't really have like a very vivid memory of my first time, like really seeing and appreciating them. But I kind of see them as like an integral like part of the experience of walking through the Evolving Planet exhibit, which is where they all are. They're so cool. And to think that they're almost like 100 years old too.
Yeah.
Which is insane to think about.
What was it here? Yeah. I mean, so I have a book that I've been reading and I just lost my page, but I remember the page. It's Charles R. Knight, The Artist Who Saw Through Time. It's by Richard Milner. My sister got it for me because she lived in Chicago for many years. But it basically is, there's a little biography at the top of, you know, about Charles Knight. And I described to you after reading this book that he's like a real fucker, classic artist type. But yeah, he got the score for the Field Museum in 1926, and it was a commission of $139,000 at the time. Which, what is that in today's money?
I don't know. We got to get a conversion calculator.
Yeah, it's probably like a million.
Yeah,
or
I would hope it's a million. That's a lot of murals, and they're huge.
Yes, they're huge.
Absolutely massive.
So, yeah, for anyone who doesn't know about the Field Museum, I mean, I've obviously talked about it a bunch on this podcast over the years, but it is, you know, it feels like to me one of the biggest natural history museums. You know, it's been around for over 100 years now at this point. And it is, to me, it's just, I really love it just because I think the murals were one of the things that stuck out to me the first time I went. Because, yeah, so many museums are like, which is great, is like, okay, new thing, new thing, new thing, like mm-hmm. update the science.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like, and you were just, you know, saying of like, to me, it like, it acknowledges the history of, mm-hmm. of like, even just the way that dinosaurs are represented.
Yeah.
And did that stick out to you? Like the first time you're just like, oh shit, look at those like... Because they're like as big as some of the skeletons, you know?
Yeah, like they're fossils. It's crazy. And like, I think looking back, I probably didn't realize that they were oil paintings. I probably just, I don't know. Like, I think.
And that's your medium.
Yeah. I like would almost like, because just the scale and how the number of them.
I mean, there's 28 of them. I believe. I don't know how many are still on display.
Yeah.
The original commission was 28.
Yeah. I think like at first. Looking at them, I didn't comprehend what they were really. Yeah. It was just like, oh, okay. But as someone who paints,
I'm like,
there's a whole new like appreciation for them. And the fact that they're such massive scale and so well kept too is really incredible.
Yeah.
And I don't remember the timeline that he painted those.
It was only like 4 years.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And honestly, this book doesn't get into it super too much. Like that, like, did you, at what point, because you, like, and in the last episode you mentioned, too, of, like, growing up going to the Field Museum, at what point were you like, okay, who's this person that did this? Was that something where you were like, because you're starting to paint and stuff, you got into, like, actually? Because, like, you know, I think the first time I went to the Field Museum was, I think, 2015, mm-hmm. maybe? 2014, 2015. So, you know, I was, like, already an adult, so I was just like, who the hell did these, you know? Like, I want these on my wall. Like, we've talked before about, like, wanting a full set.
Yeah.
Like, I would kill for, like, even 11 by 17 and, like, just, like, you know, doing, like, a whole wall just devoted to these.
That would be really cool.
Like, I'd get the whole set.
Yeah.
But, like, at what point were you, like, where were you in your painting journey, like, and then also being, like, who is this guy? Like, that kind of thing.
I think, so, when I was kind of starting out with oil painting, I was kind of revisiting, this was like after college when I started doing oil painting more. I was kind of revisiting things that I enjoyed that I kind of like maybe lost touch with, mm-hmm. like during high school, college, like as I was like, you know, growing up a little bit. And thinking about the things that I like used to enjoy as like a kid that I kind of want to like,
yeah, yeah.
revisit, because I wasn't really sure where I wanted to go with my career. And there was like someone who told me like, you know, what are the things that you have always enjoyed or like used to enjoy that you still enjoy now? And one of those things was dinosaurs and obviously going to the Field Museum and the zoo and like animals.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was visiting the Field Museum a lot more often. I think I visited the museum in my, like between like, you know, 21 and now, like 3 times more than I probably did when I was growing up.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm there a lot. And that's probably around the time that I kind of started like looking at who did make these?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Cause I, you know, you see them, obviously, you know, when you go to the Field Museum, you want to see Sue.
Yeah.
And see all the dinosaurs in the Evolving Planet exhibit is like a must see every time.
Yeah, it's the first thing you do when you're there.
Literally.
Because, like, you know, there's other great stuff, the Lions of Savo, you know, or is that how you say it? I don't know how to pronounce it, but the man-eating lions or like, you know, taxidermy stuff or maybe, I mean, like we've talked about it before where it's like gems, dinosaurs, those are usually like first on the list mm-hmm. for a natural history museum, no matter where you go.
Oh, yeah.
And like, I mean, we haven't even mentioned yet. He was basically blind when he did all this stuff.
Yeah.
Which is insane.
Crazy.
Yeah, the man was born in 1974, he was born in 1874. Like, I didn't realize until reading this, like, how much he was, like, the first guy to, like, well, obviously, and he, even in the book, he was like, well, no, like, cavemen were the first paleo artists, basically. Mm-hmm. Like, even giving, but, like, this is still such a new, I think people listening, we, you know, mostly a Jurassic Park podcast with a bunch of other stuff, but it is like, you know, Jurassic Park was like our first, well, wasn't our first represent, you know, seeing dinosaurs. It was our first time seeing dinosaurs on the big screen for sure. Mm-hmm. But like, or like Land Before Time or something like that. But like the notion that somebody, it's the thing that the disconnect sometimes where I'm like, oh, I'm seeing a dinosaur. And it's like, no, I'm seeing like what people think of you know, because it's like, they just, It's that thing that I always forget, you know, it's like, oh, it's like, this is, it's not, it's all educated guessing, but it is just like, that's the thing I don't think about where it's like, oh, they're all digging up bones. And then he was like one of the first people to be like, maybe what they actually look like. Like, that's the part that I'm like still coming to terms with even now. Just like, nobody was drawing dinosaurs before him, basically.
Yeah. And I mean, like, it's cool that he credits, you know, cave people.
Yeah.
But they were seeing them in real life.
Yeah, yeah. The woolly mammoths, at least.
Yeah.
And some religious people, you know, dinosaurs and man coexisted. And God was like, he told Noah to be like, don't tell the dinosaurs about the ark
thing.
They're
not invited.
Yeah, they're not invited. Hey! It's sailing
away. They're
too
heavy. You got to leave them.
Yeah. You got to leave some of them behind.
Yeah.
I guess to me, I like, appreciate the Field Museum because why would you get rid of these?
No, they better not.
Yeah.
They better not.
But they put it in the context. So it's not like when you're there, you're like,
oh yeah. Like they have like, you know, there's a few placards like in the like throughout the Evolving Planet where you can learn a little bit about them.
Yeah.
At least two, I think we saw. Yeah. It's just like, it's a piece of history. It's a integral part of the museum. Like I really hope they don't get rid of them just because they're outdated.
Well, and that's what the funny thing too is, like reading this, like he really got his start with the American Museum of Natural History in New York, mm-hmm. which I also went to last year. Mm-hmm. Have you been?
No, not yet.
It's great. It's funny where, again, it feels like every museum has to wrestle with this idea of like, how do we incorporate, you know, the years of the knowledge? And then it's like, okay, these, because, you know, it costs so much money. I know somebody that's working on an exhibit for the Academy Museum in L.A. And it's like, oh, yeah, my thing's not going to come out for like 8 years. And you're like, you know, like it's just one of those things where you're just like, there's only so much room for things to change mm-hmm. in a museum. So mm-hmm. it's like, how do you, I think museums now are probably updating stuff faster than they did back then.
Oh, definitely.
And again, 4 years when you're nearly blind to paint you murals that are like 20 by 10 or something like that. Like,
yeah,
they're huge. There's like a great, in this book, there's like a great picture of showing some folks restoring one of his drawings. And that's the thing too, of like, that was cool about this book. I'll put a link to it in the show notes, but like the idea that these murals inspired like Fantasia, like that stuff too, is so wild to think about, where Have you always been into, like, I guess, because you've drawn dinosaurs, are you more into, like, trying to represent them? Or are you like, I want to draw bones? Like, because you've done a little bit of both, right?
Yeah, I'm more so interested in, like, representing them than doing, like, the skeletal.
Yeah.
That's a little more tedious, I think. It's not as fun.
Yeah, well, no, I'm sure.
You don't get, like, the personality or the, you don't get to have a little bit of fun with it.
Yeah, like, to me, like, a skeleton is, I mean, I do like looking at the bones, but, like, it is, what is it? You know, if, especially now, like, things are more exciting where it is, like, you know, people, I was going to say fan art of dinosaurs.
Fan art.
You know. That's like, such a fan of dinosaurs.
Not paleo arts, dinosaur fan art.
Yeah, dinosaur fan art. But, I mean, I guess, can you explain oil painting again for people or for me again? But, like, I mean, these murals are so huge. I just, how do you even, like, begin to, or at least when you paint, like, how do you even begin, like, what, take me through the process of, like, doing a painting.
That's a loaded question. <You're> like, oh, man.
Because you did, I mean, for listeners who've been keeping up with our podcasting journey together, because you were on the Percast, it was only what?
Like, that was like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
As of like last month, I think.
Yeah. Because you painted Samba and Tango, the Percast Sarah Iyer's Cats. Yeah. And you do these incredible oil paintings that whenever I show people, they're like, how is that not a photo? It looks real.
And thank you.
I'm not an artist. So like, I'm like, this is witchcraft. And I'm going to go to hell for purchasing one of your, for commissioning you. But everyone should commission one. How do you even be, again, drawing is so mysterious to me. So like, how do you even be like, how, well, especially if it's like a dinosaur, like how do you go from like something that is even, I was gonna say is not real, dinosaurs are real, catch myself there, they're not alive anymore, we don't have photos of them. Yes. But yeah, like what's a typical painting like for you?
So I start off with a sketch, obviously, usually pretty loose sketch, just so I have an idea of like what I like want to do with it. I do a lot of pet portraits, so a lot of the times I'm just given, like, you know, they'll give me references. I usually ask for a lot just so I can get an idea of like what color of the animal, like, so I can best represent them. But a lot of the times, like, they people that commission me want me to go from like a particular photo, rendering that the pose and, you know, get the likeness of the animal as close as possible. And then a lot of the times I will like transfer that directly using like a transfer sheet, or depending on the size of it, I'll just draw like a really simple, like 6-piece like grid and just redraw it on the wood that I'm working on. And then do like an underpainting of like burnt sienna color, something to kind of like get like a, kind of give it like a medium shade,
okay,
so to speak. You don't really want to work straight from like a white canvas. It's a lot, it makes it a lot more difficult. You can kind of see value a lot better if you put like an underpainting. Yeah.
Okay.
It helps you get a better understanding of like the value and the depth of the colors that you're using. And it also kind of brings out, it kind of like shine, the underpainting kind of shines through a little bit too. And it kind of unifies the piece visually, because it's, you kind of, sometimes you'll see flecks of the underpainting peeking through.
Oh, cool.
Depending on how, I guess, how one paints. But yeah, and I just work in layers from there. Usually I'll do like 2 or 3 more layers where I'll just like put a base color down and just block color in, and then I'll put the details in.
Are you standing or sitting? These are dumb
questions.
I'm
usually sitting.
Okay.
Yeah. I have like a table easel that I use.
Yeah.
I am working on a personal piece right now. I'm glad that we're talking about large scale paintings. I'm working on a pretty, for me, large for me painting that's like 18 by 24, I think.
Okay.
And it's been interesting because I'm so used to like the one I did of Samba and Tango, I think was like 6 by 8 or something.
Yeah.
Which is about like average size painting I normally get commissioned to do. But that I don't really need to like move to like really view, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
With this one I'm working on, I have to stand sometimes because it's so large, and I have to step back and look at it because I can't, I don't know how Charles Knight did it, not being able to see, because you have to step back and look at it. I'm wondering how well he could see from, like, I know he had like a really bad astigmatism, right? Well,
and he got some kid threw a rock in his eye.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Like the way they describe it was just like a
brutal
spray of blood. Like, it's rough. Yeah. It's super rough. And like, And yeah, so he was like dealing with that his whole life. So I'm sure that he like adapted in that way. But yeah. But, you know, when he was like, again, I have this, it's like a big coffee table book, you know, when he was like an art school fucker, like, look at him, you know, just like what, like, what do you call those hats? Like a derby, like,
is that a bowler hat?
Bowler hat. Yeah. Like spectacles.
Yeah. Like, look at this man.
God, who would play him in a movie?
Which like, one is he in this picture?
The in the white. Yeah.
Oh my God. Is that a cigarette hanging?
Yeah. Cigarette.
I love it.
Like you could probably... I could see, you know, maybe get Barry Keoghan to do like a sexy, you know, version of him, you know. Yeah. But that was the thing, like, I didn't know about him growing up, or like that he, you know, he wasn't a Nepo baby, but he just like had a lot of connections and stuff. And people really saw his talent. And then he, the person at the American Museum of Natural History, really loved him. Mm-hmm. And that was the thing, because to me, he is such a field museum guy. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize it until reading this, that like basically he, and this was like the age of like, you know, the Bone Wars like were happening when he was a kid. Again, for people who don't know, like the Bone Wars was on all these old white dudes were like trying to just name every dinosaur. And it was just, it feels like a Coen Brothers movie where like they were like destroying, it was like horrifying, you know.
Is there a movie about this? There has to be.
Well, there was gonna be a movie with like James Gandolfini and Steve Carell, like where they were gonna play Edward Drinker Cope and oh my gosh, what's the other guy? Owen. Othniel Marsh.
Yes.
You know, and it was like, you know, just the kind of like Wild West, like Civil War time, like,
oh man, you know, what a missed opportunity with James Gandolfini.
I know, yeah, like.
But, that would have been so good. Because it's just such a... The Dalek did an episode on it,
yes,
too.
Yes, yeah.
Because well, of course they did, because it's so ridiculous.
Yes.
It's such a ridiculous story.
Yeah, I'll link to the Dalek episode, too. Like, I feel like I was talking to Gareth one time, and I was just like, that was just like one of those episodes, though, where like the early ones where I first listened to, and I was like, so hooked. But then also just learning the ridiculous history of paleontology was so cool. But also, I mean, it's devastating, because it's like, you know... It's just classic scientist fuckers, you know, and their egos and everything like that.
Two ego trips.
Yeah. But then Charles Knight, like, grew up in that environment of, like, there was all this, at least at the start, there was all this money and investing. And, like, it was basically a race to build all these. I love how Chris is being so sweet and
tiptoeing
around. But basically, like, at the time, like, the environment was, like, the American Natural History Museum was, like, we want to be on, the ground floor of, like, not just showing bones, but, like, representing them. Like you said, that there's something kind of fascinating about the idea of wanting to sort of guess and, you know, use evidence. And because, you know, like, Charles Knight would, like, had the museum access to, like, look at the bones and, like, do the guesswork and stuff, because it's like you can't, you know, you have to do some guesswork if you're, because we don't, I mean, up until the last like maybe 10-15 years, dinosaurs, there hadn't even been any, like, barely any skin impressions, like,
oh yeah,
what's the, was it an ankylosaurus that was like found mummified? Or
I don't think it was specifically an ankylosaurus, but
Bucephalus,
it was, well, some, I think it was a related,
yeah.
But I can't remember. I know exactly which fossil you're talking about.
Yeah, I have the picture in my head. But yeah, like, there's a lot of guesswork involved, but, you know, educated guesswork and stuff. And the thing that was fascinating to me about reading this book was that, like, essentially he was just, like, the bratty genius. And then, like, they like, copy some of his letters and stuff where it's just, like, because the guy who ran the American Museum of Natural History was just like, oh, you son of a bitch, you're so talented, but, like, you're so hard to work with. Like, oh, maybe I can give you some assistance. And then, like, you, there's, like, these letters where it's, like, I noticed that you seem to think that you can give me assistance. That would be most troublesome. Like, being, like, a total passive-aggressive, like, little shit, you know? And it was really the fact that, like, there was just this period where the American Museum of Natural History was, like, trying to get funding to basically make a dinosaur hall for Charles Knight. But then the Field Museum in Chicago is, like, coming up, and they're like, we want to build our dinosaur hall. And, like, and then again, like I said earlier, like, in 19, It's the wrong
They kind of like whisked him away from
essentially, yes. They essentially whisked him away because George Kuntz, who ran the Field Museum, was just like, yeah, like, why wouldn't you give this guy all the money? Mm-hmm. But then, unfortunately, George Kuntz died in, like, 32, because everyone is just, like, riddled with tuberculosis or whatever. I don't know if he died of tuberculosis, but... But it's just, to me, it's just like, it's, Charles Knight's work is so integral to the Field Museum that it was surprising that, like, there was all this back and forth. And so then when George Kuntz died, like, Knight was like, oh, I guess I'll go back to the American Museum. And then, you know, what was really funny was that, so I was on the Field Museum's website, and they describe, in the early 1920s, among Knight's great admirers was Dr. George Kuntz, the renowned, I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name right, apologies. The renowned gemologist for Tiffany's. So, and then worked with the field. So visiting Knight's studio, Kuntz was struck by the fact that the Field Museum did not own any of Knight's work. Dr. Kuntz worked with Knight's daughter, Lucy, to secure a contract to create the biggest commission yet. Like, this was a huge score. Mm-hmm. But I love the, like, the difference between, like, this book and this little description on the website where they're like, you know, we got to tidy up the history. Mm-hmm. I think I said that Kuntz ran the Field Museum. That's not true. He just was, like, you know, worked with them. Mm-hmm. But he worked with Knight's daughter, Lucy, which actually wasn't the case, which was like when they hired Charles Knight, then a bunch of people came in and were like, hey, how about you make the colors brighter? And why don't you do mm-hmm. that stuff? So then Charles Knight literally was like, fuck this, moved back to New York. And then I have to find the quote.
Did he throw a tantrum?
Yeah, he basically threw a tantrum and walked out and went back to New York.
No.
Oh, yeah. Henry Field, obviously. Oh, he was the nephew of the Field Museum president, Stanley Field. That's who I was referring to earlier. But George Kuntz was like, why don't you guys have any of Charles Knight's stuff? But Knight's proposed hues for the new dinosaur hall were too pale and powdery, they said. And if they were to appear to approve, if they were to approve him for the project, needed to punch up those colors and brighten up his palette. And he was just like, I don't take notes, basically. Yeah,
like, you're getting what you get.
Yeah. And then, basically, again, I love the way that this was worded, which was like, Dr. Kuntz worked with Knight's daughter, Lucy, to secure a contract. Well, what it says in, obviously, a much more detailed biography, Knight's feisty and beautiful daughter, Lucy, then in her mid-20s, was outraged when her parents returned home empty-handed. She immediately headed for Chicago and burst unceremoniously into the museum's conference room. You should be ashamed of yourselves for allowing my father to walk out of here, she scolded the startled committee. Don't you realize when it comes to prehistoric murals, you have turned away the modern Rembrandt? Like, I want to see this in a movie.
That's what I was just going to say. This is like, it's so wild. She flew all the way. She traveled all the way from.
Probably like horse and carriage.
Yeah, I was going to say, not flying. She
or no, I guess it was the, no, it was like 26, so. There was already planes because it was World War II.
Still.
She probably did take a car.
Yeah.
Across and from New York to
Chicago.
Just to
go yell at them.
Yeah. Like Florence Pugh, you know, is going to play the daughter of Charles R. Knight.
Yeah.
I guess Barry Keoghan would be like the young Charles Knight and then maybe like, is that the Tooch? Maybe the Tooch plays the old Charles Knight?
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah, I don't know. It's really fascinating. Obviously, I'm not going into the full history here, but it just struck me that when you go into the Evolving Planet exhibit, you're like, boom, boom, boom. Like
mm-hmm. The first one you see, I think, is of just like limestone sediment. This is a bunch of rocks.
And pools. And
yeah,
stuff.
And pools. And we talked about this earlier, but I found out that if you look at all of his paintings chronologically from when you like first walk into the Evolving Planet to the end, they kind of become more and more in focus.
Yes.
Like, so like the passage of time, things become a little bit more clear. I never knew that. I can't wait to go like actually see in person tomorrow. Because
knowing
I mean,
now,
just, yeah. And because I distinctly remember that first painting when you walk in, and I always kind of just attribute it to it being very, very old.
Yeah.
But it is very hard to decipher. I mean, the scan of it online is pretty bright compared to what it looks like in person. It's very cloudy looking. And I mean, a lot of that could be because of the age of the painting, but you know, it's because he did it on purpose.
Yeah.
Which is really cool.
And he was basically blind.
And he was blind, so he probably couldn't like how much of his own painting could he see? I don't know.
Yeah. No, I mean, by the very end of his life, it was like he couldn't see like 8 feet in front of him.
Jesus. You know? That's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, having them be such a large scale is probably helpful mm-hmm. rather than working on something very small where he can't see like fine details and stuff. But if he can't see 8 feet in front of him and he's working on a huge mural, you can't step back and really like look at it. So I just want to know.
Yeah.
I would have loved to see like how he made something like that with his vision being so impaired.
Yeah.
It's really, it adds a whole nother layer to how like amazing those paintings are that he was basically like nose to the canvas working.
Just like has a little smudge of paint on his face.
I bet he got paint in his hair all the time.
And oil paint is like hard to, it doesn't dry very well, right? Or like it's slower, right?
It's slow drying. It can be touch dry like pretty quickly, but it needs to cure, it's called. So I mean, it could take months for a painting like that to, and I don't know.
What?
Yeah, and I mean, depending on what kind of materials he used back in the day, like, you know, it could have taken a really long time for those paintings to, like, be ready.
Yeah.
Ready, and, like, varnished, and, yeah, that it's just, now I'm just thinking about how many tubes of paint he needed. And the size brushes he used.
Yeah. I mean, there's some pictures of him.
It's just so hard for me to like grasp because I don't work on paintings that large.
Yeah. It's all the same materials, but
yeah, but it's just a lot more.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing too, that's kind of a little bit unclear in this book. It's just like, he did have assistants, but like in his mind, it's like he just like maybe needed tools to help and he didn't care to work well with others, you know? Mm-hmm. So
which is also crazy because muralists, a lot of the times, do have someone helping them.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say all the time, but I feel like a lot of the times that they do.
No, I know a person who's a muralist for Disneyland and California Adventure, and they work on a team of like a handful of people.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, I can imagine that it would take a long time to do something like that.
Yeah, and with him, again, not being able to see.
Yeah.
You know,
and also
wonder,
he did some modeling work and sculpture work as well too.
Yeah, and I want to talk about that too because that is another really cool tool to use for something like paleo art where you don't have the physical animal in front of you. And I know James Gurney does this a lot, mm-hmm. and he has previously. He actually I'm part of his newsletter, and he actually just recently a couple weeks ago put out a couple newsletter articles about maquettes and like the model making process.
And I think we both definitely want to do a James Gurney episode.
Please, I would love to.
That's wild to me because like James Gurney, like the Dinotopia thing is so specific to my childhood because it's just wild to me that he's just still around kicking, doing amazing work. Like
he puts out like, I don't want to dwell on it too much because we can do a whole episode on him, but I first of all admire his work so much, but he puts out so much helpful information for free all the time, and I've learned so much from that man. He's awesome, but he also does the small figurines which helps you kind of like get an idea of what
and
like
you've done some of that, right?
No, I want for the June episodes.
That
for the things I'm going to do for those, but it also helps you with like lighting, so like see how like, you know, in different lightings, like where the shadows like hit and, you know, highlights and all that stuff. And it's cool to see that he was doing those too.
There's so much more than I ever, and it's not because of like perspective now and like, cause you do some digital stuff as well too, but it is that thing of, I think people just don't appreciate how much work goes into it because it isn't just like just drawing the thing and, or just painting the thing right then and there. There's so much prep work involved.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, again, the idea of creating, like that's even with, you know, with Jurassic Park and stuff is that, you know, the team would sculpt, they would do concept art and then make maquettes and then build bigger things and then finally build the animatronics and then build it digitally. Like it isn't just, to me, it's always impressive because it is like a holistic experience where I'm sure you're even just like generating ideas and thinking, you know, it's not just like literally I'm just making this thing from scratch overnight. It's like a whole process.
Yeah. And doing paleo art as a whole, I think it's not just, you know, you don't just like jump, obviously you don't just jump in and start drawing them. You also have to have a really good understanding of like animal anatomy.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Because since we don't have living versions of these dinosaurs or any extinct animal, you're kind of going off of skeletal remains, which, you know, only can tell you so much, but then you have to kind of look at close living relatives.
Yeah.
And what they might have looked like, their musculature and all that stuff. And before Charles Knight was, you know, doing murals for the Field Museum, he was also like a wildlife painter.
Yes.
Did like 1,000, I think, or close to 1,000 paintings of just living animals. So he had a really good understanding of just like how animals were moved and what they looked like. And I think that obviously translated really well when he was doing paleo art.
Yeah, I'm sure it like, because, yeah, it's just like because you don't have those real life references. But, you know, they were animals, you know, just like anything else. So it's like they had, yeah, this is one of his first drawings is of his family dog.
Aww.
Isn't that so cute?
Oh, my God. That's like the little drawings I did of Coco.
Yeah. But like, and then these are of his mom and wife, maybe, or daughter. No, that's his daughter.
The one that stormed. Wife. Is that the one that stormed into the
Lucy. Lucy's maybe Lucy can be played by Sophie Turner.
Yeah.
But what was I gonna say? There was another thing about he does an Okapi drawing. I was very delighted. And then he actually did a real life drawing of a painting of a thylacocene, which is the goodness. Before it went extinct because they were still at the Bronx Zoo.
That's crazy.
There was one still at the Bronx Zoo at the time.
Oh my God.
That's like such a, like to think about being alive at that time. Like he was in his like, again, like youthful sort of prime between, because he was born in 1874. So then, yeah, from like the early 10s through to the like 40s, basically, like that range was like when he was operating and working and stuff. And then I forgot about it because I had started reading this a while ago and then finished it. I was like reading it on the train coming out here today. It was very delightful. It was so obnoxious, like this giant coffee table book.
Look on the train.
It's for work. But we were saying right before recording, his last words were, "Don't let anything happen to my drawings." Because, I mean, again, I think he was kind of a paranoid. He's definitely neurodivergent for sure. Obviously, he was dealing with this, you know, horrible... Or, you know, in his words, this affliction that like kind of he talks a lot about being depressed in here where I'm like, girl, same. But like he also was just I think there was such a different time, you know, and even nowadays we're dealing with companies like stealing people's art or like drawing very similar things. And it like nothing's changed where he basically was like the person at the American Museum of Natural History was like, can I see some of your drawings? And he was like,
no,
but only for 5 minutes and you can't and I'm not going to mail them to you because he like didn't want them like, you know, that stuff happens like that idea poaching where he basically was like so paranoid of like if I mail these drawings to the museum that they will like get somebody, you know, they'll like what is it called when you just like lowball like get somebody faster and cheaper to do it or whatever, you know.
And I feel like that definitely happened over time because maybe not like direct copies, but I mean his work's been out in circulation for so long.
Yeah, there's definitely people have been so inspired by
it's almost
Osborne was basically the person who like in the movie that would be the love-hate relationship would be between Charles R. Knight and what's his first name? I need to find his first name. Knight. Like this is like JP Morgan was alive, like the original JP, like, you know, he met Edward Drinker Cope like during his final days when like he was like hoarding his bones, you know, in his apartment. Again, Edward Drinker Cope is like one of the OG paleontologists in America. And I love this quote from Charles Larned, where he's like talking about meeting, like hanging, because, you know, this incredible, like one of the original paleontologists in America. Like, it's important to note, too, obviously, indigenous people and, like, you know, the role of Native Americans had in helping these paleontologists pick up these bones and stuff and everything. But, you know, again, this would be like a scene in the movie where you'd get, like, I don't know, like Christopher Plummer or something, like the old madman in his house filled with bones. And it often found Cope virtually living in the past, vividly remember it, picturing himself on the muddy shores of the Permian seas of Texas, where the finback lizards bask, or the great freshwater expanses of Wyoming and Montana, where the dinosaurs wandered. It is fortunate that some of this imaginative history has been written down, and that although physically enfeebled by a mortal illness, Professor Cope in his last days was able to convey to Mr. Knight, the artist, his impressions of how these ancient saurians lived and moved. You're like, oh.
Okay.
Like, so he's just like in his 20s, and it's like that first generation of paleontologists are like dying. And so then he's like taking that knowledge to then create all these, all the amazing.
And you said he's like one of the first, like, aside from cave people, like the first
known paleo artists. Really, I mean, because, you know, dinosaur bones were only found in like the 1800s.
Right.
So they're in like people were, you know, like just drawing, like, I mean, first it was just like even the idea that this is all still at the same time when like Darwin was like, you know, in court, like, you know, like, and like all that. Like, it's just, it's wild that this stuff is like equally old, but not that old, really.
Yeah.
Like, we've only known about dinosaurs for like,
that's weird to think about,
200 years or whatever. That's like, obviously, about, like, you think about like different groups in the past who maybe like dragons or, you know, worms or wyverns or whatever. Now we're back in Magic the Gathering territory. Like, you know, there have been other representations of dinosaurs, but the modern, you know, the modern like conception of dinosaurs and that whole thing and that, you know, the Earth is billions of years old and all that stuff. Like, that's not that new, you know?
That's crazy.
Yeah.
And I think, if I am not mistaken, Charles Knight did the first, if not one of the first, artist renderings of T-Rex.
Yeah.
Because T-Rex came out. T-Rex was discovered around that. In his lifetime.
I know, and that is wild. I want to find the name of, what's his name? Charles Knight, and then there's Osborne. I'm something of a scientist myself. Henry Fairfield Osborne was basically the person who ran the American Museum of Natural History. And it is weird, again, that the Field Museum was just in this brief period where, like, it was, again, a struggle because it was like, it's like everybody wanted to put everything, you know, they wanted to have the best dinosaur hall in the world, you know? This was like the original wave of like, well, we got to have, like, we're not just going to have bones. We're going to have, you know, and fossils and stuff and like impressions. But no, like, we're going to have these like paintings that bring them to life. Like, this was the original Jurassic Park. Like, Charles Knight was the original, like, the first time people were like, oh shit, that's what a dinosaur is. You know? This was the time when, like, because there's a lot of great stuff of, like, Charles Knight answering religious critics and stuff being, like, you know, like, how, like, you think humans are superior? Like, we're all divine. Like, again, because, you know, the words to describe stuff, like, I think there's a lot of people then who maybe believed in God, but, like, just were like, but nature rules and, like, evolution is awesome, but they don't have the language to describe it in the way that, like, we do now.
Yeah.
So, but there is a quote from Charles Knight where he's like, bitch, we're all divine. Like, basically, like,
I love that.
Yeah. Right. Don't take my drawings.
Don't take my drawings.
Yeah. But like, that was like a thing where he basically, like, during this period where he ended up working with the Field, where it was like, and you know, that was the thing too, which was kind of cool, was that Henry Osborne, oh my God, isn't this, the Green Goblin, like Harry Osborn? Oh, no, that's the James Franco in Spider-Man.
Willem Dafoe?
Well, the son is Harry.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah, I wasn't sure if you were referring to like, the actor's names.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, it's just a wild. I would love to see this dramatized because it's just so like spicy.
Yeah, you know? It is. It's like him hitting the eye with a rock. His daughter like flying all the way to Chicago to yell at the board members of the Field Museum. him just being him.
Yeah.
And it sounds like kind of dramatic too. You sound like kind of a dramatic guy.
Yeah. Well, it's all this thing too, where there's all these like, you know, he always needed money. And he just wasn't, he didn't want to like deal with the whole thing of like asking for money and figuring out. So it was always just like, just whatever. Like he like obviously needed money to live and stuff, but he wasn't like good at getting money or asking for it. It was just always like, I want to do my art, you know?
Yeah.
Everyone else needs to figure it out around
me.
which, you know, you can take or leave how much you find that admirable or not at all. You know, I mean, I think he was first to admit that he was a little bit of a fucker. Like, again, that's how I love describing him. I wanted to read one more thing, and I wanted to maybe wrap up the episode with some of our favorite of his paintings. But the way I like this one, this sketch that he did of the T-Rexes, a very rare pencil sketch.
Rare.
And I'm going to post a bunch of photos and of the murals and stuff. I mean, but
I already know what my favorite one is. I pointed it out last time we were at the museum.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yes. Yeah. And they recreate it here. Oh yeah. Cause that was the other thing is that the thing that's like hashtag relatable now is that he was fiercely independent. Cause again, Henry Osborn wanted him to be basically a staff employee, like a staff artist for the American Museum of Natural History. But Charles R. Knight wanted to be, he basically was like, I'm an independent contractor. Like, because I think, you know, for people who are independent, who are freelance artists and stuff, the problem sometimes with going full time on a place is that your time isn't as valued as when you're basically getting to be your own boss. And it's like the difference between somebody being your boss or that company or that museum being your client. Mm-hmm. And so I think Charles Knight was smart where he was just like, I don't want to be an employee. I want to be a client.
Yeah.
Or a vendor, whatever, you know. And then Henry Anderson was like, come on, just work for me. It'll be fine. But did you know they were going to make a Charles Knight Museum? But it never got made.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
Yeah. And then the other thing that I just discovered on the way here is that he wanted to make his own Jurassic Park, basically.
Yes.
That's insane. That he basically was like, I want to make a park where people can go see sculptures of dinosaurs. Mm-hmm. Like, not real dinosaurs, but, you know, still, like, that's wild to me.
Yeah, and I think someone ended up doing that
World's Fair, they did
in the 60s.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're talking about a different one.
Yeah. I mean, there's been variations of this. Obviously, there's like the Cabazon dinosaurs out in California on the way to like Vegas or Palm Springs or whatever. Yeah. There's the Ogden Dinosaur Park in Utah, which I've been to, where they just have like statues of dinosaurs. Like,
yeah. I was literally just reading about this morning, but World's Fair Park, when I was looking through the photos of it, one of the statues looks just like that Lambiosaurus. I think it's a Lambiosaurus that's at the Brookfield Zoo.
Oh, wow.
We saw. I think it's like the same thing. Like, I don't know if they use the same model or something, but I was like, that's the same exact model. So I want to like, now I want to dig. This is completely off topic. I'm so sorry.
No.
But I wanted to add that little tidbit. But
yeah.
Now I want to like dig and like see like if they maybe use the same.
Well, I mean, it's just because it's been, I think stuff like, I think Jurassic Park obviously was such a monumental piece of Jurassic representation in our lifetime that it's almost like you kind of forget. I think people kind of forget Charles Knight or like forget about King Kong. But like King Kong was like influenced by, you know, the dinosaurs in King Kong were influenced by Charles Knight.
Yeah.
And Fantasia and Land Before Time.
And that Moldorama.
The Moldoramas, you know.
I think that specific one, if you look, It has to be. I was trying to find more information on that earlier too, because I was like ready to give those to you. And I was like, I think this is like based off of, if you look up Charles Knight T-Rex.
Yeah. This one. Yeah.
Not just that one. There's the one that he did, like the first one.
Oh, okay.
Where it looks, it's like that weird head. It's like kind of short. He's got like a short head.
Yeah.
Obviously like the weird posture, but it looks like
yeah,
that. I think it's the same. Which is very, I'm glad I got that because now it ties in.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's a piece. It's all of a piece. And yeah, it's with the tail drooping on the floor. Because that even ties into the original Jurassic Park logo and everything. And how like at the American Museum of Natural History influenced Chip Kidd when he did the logo for Jurassic Park.
Yeah. It's
yeah. Standing attention.
I'm wearing a Jurassic Park shirt under this actually.
But yeah, it's like all of this, it's all connected.
It's all connected. And all it comes back to this guy.
Yeah.
This fucker.
That's the, this fucker, Charles R. Knight. And yeah, his daughter said to him like during basically like just to do like a, you know, talk about your dad. And it was like, one of the importance is that Charles R. Knight has never been on staff of any museum. I like that. That's like the first thing she opens with.
Takes pride.
Yeah.
He has never been an employee.
Yeah. He has always worked independently. Either patrons have presented his murals to the museums or other institutions or have purchased from their own funds. Toppy. That's
cute.
Wild nickname in 2024. Is truly loved by nearly everyone, extremely appreciative, serious, and sincere about his work. Outside of that, he is a spoiled but delightful child. Again, I think that really like gets to the heart. He is no fool when it comes to analyzing people, but prefers animals. Cannot cheapen work for cash. I like how Lucy, too, is like really taking up his legacy and is like, don't get it twisted.
Yeah.
Yeah, what are your favorite of his murals at the museum?
Definitely the one with the sea turtle and
the Mosasaurus.
I think it's the Mosasaurus.
Yeah, or something. This one right here.
It's just every time
I
see it.
Describe it.
So there's some pterosaurs in the background, but it's a sea landscape, and we've got a marine reptile, Tylosaurus.
Because it's a mosasaur, but it's a
tylosaur. Yeah, it looks like a, and it's about to eat a sea turtle. And both the tylosaur and the sea turtle look very, very happy. They're both like grinning, or it looks like they're grinning. And it's just so, it looks so goofy to me. I know they're not actually smiling, but they look like they're smiling.
Yeah, it's very,
and it makes me giggle when I see it.
It's just like, you know, like that kind of like that energy like, of like, you know, I think I've always loved thinking about, because I think if I had a time machine, I would want to go back to like that time. I want to see what the Earth was like.
Yeah.
You know, 65 million years ago, 100 million years ago. It's always that great mind bending fact where you're like, there was more time between, like, we're closer in time to a T-Rex than a T-Rex is to a Stegosaurus.
Yeah.
Like that is just like,
that hurts my brain to think about every time. Every like, time.
I'm going to go lay down now.
Yeah, I would love to be able to go back in time and take a couple pictures. It looks like that particular mural, it almost looks like they're in the middle of something, just like doing their thing. And then someone was like, okay, say cheese. And they're like, and they just like froze.
Yes, totally. I don't know if it's my favorite, but one of my favorites is of all the Dimetrodons. Dimetrodons.
I would say Dimetrodon, but
Dimetrodons.
But I could be wrong.
Edaphosaurus and Cassia. Basically, it's from the, because a Dimetrodon's not a dinosaur. It's like the earlier guys.
More related to us than dinosaurs.
Yes. Yes. Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is also another wild.
Yeah. Yeah. And they were in Jurassic World Dominion, which was exciting. I kind of didn't care for their design personally. That's kind of one of my, I would say, like, if I had to express one of my biggest disappointments in regards to Jurassic World Dominion, is that I kind of didn't care for the Dimetrodon design.
Yeah,
it was a little disappointing to me. Like, but I also grew up with the Kenner Dimetrodon design, and that to me is so iconic that like I just feel like nothing is ever gonna beat that for me, because it's also like, we have, you know, at the Field Museum, they have full skeletons of that with,
and the mural's right there.
To describe the reptile, it's basically like a long lizard guy, but it's got a huge sail on its back. It's kind of one of the most iconic, again, not a dinosaur, but just sort of iconic ancient creature, megafauna, that I feel like, you know, they found skeletons of them pretty early. So they've just been, the representation of them has been around for one of the, like,
really
they're
long
definitely,
time.
Yeah, I feel like they're one of the, you know, OG, like, when you look at, like, dinosaur books that I've had that, like, were from the 80s, you know, like, they would throw a Dimetrodon in there. But I really love, here, I'll show you the Kenner Dimetrodon. I mean, it's just, for anyone, like, for, like, if you grew up with this, you had this toy. It was one of the cheaper, Jurassic Park toys. Like, their version is kind of similar to the Charles Knight, where it's green. You know, it's got a big head. It's got lizard.
The lizard stance.
The lizard stance squatting. And then it's got this big sail on its back, you know, that, you know, theorized maybe temperature regulation, mating display, all the, you know.
Big mystery still, I believe.
Yeah. And so, but it's got kind of like yellow spots, but it's kind of this vibe. But the Charles Knight one has a very kind of similar vibe. But I love it because it feels so modern. And again, like, you're right, though. His murals look like they're almost like photographs in, I mean, again, the artist who saw through time.
Yeah.
And I think that's why his work still holds up, even if his the science of the way the dinosaurs look isn't holding up clearly. But like the way that he represents them feels so naturalistic that you're just like, oh, it looks like I am looking like I'm looking through a time machine.
Yeah.
And I'm just like peeking out the window and I'm like, oh, look at all these fun lizards like laying on a rock. Just like all like, you know, chilling, like they're all, and it gets that lizard thing where they're all kind of like piled on top of each
other.
Yeah,
I was just gonna say they look like a bunch of iguanas on a rock.
Yeah.
But that's, I like what you said, like, I think that's why, even though, you know, these are 100-year-old paintings and, you know, famously, like, he's a lot of the bipedal, like, dinosaurs are kind of standing upright, which is a very outdated posture.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, even though, like, science has evolved so much in the last, like, you know, almost 100 years since those paintings were done, I think there's still so much to be learned from his murals because of how dynamic they are.
Yeah.
Like, and you can really see, like, how much he understood and, like, observed in his own time living wildlife.
Yeah.
And he gave personality to every, oh my goodness.
There's a skin cat.
Anatomical cat drawing.
Yeah.
Yeah, he gave personality to every animal that he painted, even though, you know, he couldn't see them in person. He really did, like, do just an amazing job working with what he had at the time and what research they had at the time.
Yeah.
And that's another thing. And I think about this all the time in terms of, like, if I'm looking at, like, you know, if I'm at, like, an art museum, I see, like, paintings from, like, a few hundred years ago. And, you know, thinking about the resources that I have now.
Yeah.
Where I can, like, you know, if I don't have a picture of, like, you know, if I can't go and look at an elephant right now, I can go on, I can pull up reference photos on the internet.
Yeah.
And have an idea of what an elephant looks like. Charles Knight couldn't just pull up the old Google machine.
Yeah, yeah.
And look at all these different animals that he painted and drew in real life. He saw them and he observed them and he painted them. And that's just so much time and work. And there it is, my favorite painting.
Yeah, yeah. But I was a little disappointed in this book that they didn't just, like, again, I just want all of those paintings reproduced, kind of just, I mean, it's cool because they have context in some of his writings and stuff based on that, you know, on the murals and stuff. But I'm like, I just want the 28 murals in a row.
Yeah.
Like, and like a little bit of info on each. But there's like a few other books about Charles Knight, so I might just have to start getting more. But
yeah,
just getting to see it even this big, again, coffee table book size is so cool. And the thing that when I was reading this reminded me of, I feel like, something about your work was that, like, he really didn't want to, like, he kind of, and again, this way of, like, these people are imperfect, where he was just like, I don't want to look at a photograph and just copy it, you know? He, like, like you're saying, wanted to do references. And, like, because, again, the portrait you did of Samba and Tango, like, that wasn't a picture. Like, that wasn't, like, you know, I sent you tons of pictures and you created something, like, new out of it.
Yeah, and I call that Frankensteining it. I'm sure other artists have used the same term, but if I have a bunch of photos, but I don't like the pose, not like the poses, but like the poses don't work for what I'm trying to do. And for the Samba and Tango portrait, it was, I needed both of these cats to be together.
Yeah.
So I had to kind of fit them.
Yeah.
Within the space that I had. And I believe, it's been a while, so I don't really remember. It's been almost 3 years since those paintings for you. Wow. That's crazy. Sometimes I'll like take the head from one photo and I'll draw it on the, you know, the pose of another, like the body of another photo that I'm referencing. Or in some cases, I'll just like look at other photos of cats and like interpret it that way and just make sure I get the likeness correct.
I feel like that's like a thing that you share in common. And I'm sure lots of artists, but that was like a cool connection I noticed between the way Charles Knight described that, like, because photography was like new when he was born, you know, I mean, wasn't like the Civil War kind of around when like photography was invented. So yeah, like,
you can just like take the picture and have it.
Yeah.
You
had
to develop it. And
so I think it was just that thing.
It wasn't a clear photo either.
It what?
Probably wasn't a clear photo either.
No, just like a bunch of people.
Yeah. Just.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone just looks haunted. Also, because like half the photos of people then were dead bodies anyway. You know, all the funeral memorial stuff of like, we need to remember this person.
Oh, God.
You imagine somebody at that time was like, don't take a photo of my dead body. Just paint a picture. Like,
that's going to be my last words.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't photograph my body.
Yeah, don't. Again, here's the see. Again, it's like the book doesn't have all of them blown up like this. And it kind of
annoys me. Yeah, but I need like full page.
I mean, again, I would, Field Museum, I know you're listening to this. Please. One of you. I know you're listening, Field Museum. Please, I will happily, like, beautiful print art restoration is its own ASMR category now. Mm-hmm. You know, not just even creating art, but, like, restoration. Mm-hmm. Like, the V&A in London, a great museum that I spent some time at when I lived there. They have a great YouTube channel where they're, like, restoring paintings and stuff all the time. And it's just, like... It's so cool. But you like, I would happily like, I don't know, $50 for like an 11 by 17 print. I would happily pay. I guess that's a lot of money to get all 28. Maybe I don't get all 28, but maybe I get my like five favorites or something.
Yeah.
But what other ones do you like of his?
This is another good one, but I also really like the big Irish deer.
Which, let me see, we're scrolling through.
There it is, that one.
Yeah. It looks like a giant, Irish deer megaloceros from the Cenozoic.
It's so pretty.
Yeah, it's basically like, it's almost like he or she, it's almost like they're coming up to the top of like a little crest of like a little hill. And it's almost, again, it's like that photography element where it's like, it heard your like click of the camera and it like looked at you. Because it just has this beautiful like, stare, like it looks like it's staring into your soul.
Yeah, and then when you're in that portion of the museum, you walk by the skeleton first, and then you take you just turn left, and that painting is looking right at you.
Yeah,
and I always think it's so cool because it's such a stunning painting, and you're like, it's like you just finished looking at the skeleton of the animal, and then you turn around, and then this huge, beautiful painting is standing in front of you.
Yeah,
animal.
Yeah, I really like it for that reason too. Where it is that you know, the museum is again very, you know, because that's always like the big debate, right, amongst Jurassic Park people, where like, you know, the dinosaurs in the movies didn't necessarily evolve with the science because people want consistency between the movies, and like Blue couldn't just have feathers between Jurassic World and Fallen Kingdom or something.
Yeah.
And so they had to create a bunch of lore reasons for why, you know, and I think that's all kind of cool. But it would be exciting to get a dinosaur movie with like the most accurate stuff now.
Yeah.
You know,
would be cool.
Yeah. Because Jurassic Park is still sort of tied to that legacy.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Maybe we could get that in the new one.
Yeah.
Possibly. Well, it's kind of like an offshoot, but.
Well, it could be like dinosaurs made by a different company or something.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, they could. Yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
Because Biosyn now makes dinosaurs, you know. Mm-hmm. And well, what's left of, because InGen isn't around anymore, but like, or the Masrani Global, but like, those dinosaurs escaped, you know.
So yeah.
you've got the dinosaurs that are breeding in the wild. You've got what's left of InGen and Masrani Global. Then you have Biosyn, and then I'm sure there's like other somebody in a lab, like somebody in the, you know, the black market, you know, yeah, all that stuff.
That would be cool. Like the ones that got out and like are just like breeding out in, you know, out in the world somewhere, and yeah, like how they've adapted.
Yeah.
To like an environment that's not theirs.
I feel like that was like Battle at Big Rock was those like New Pseudoceratops.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think this drawing too of the Triceratops and the T-Rex, because that is like,
that's the
Charles
Knight painting.
Yeah, this is like, it's just, it's one of those things where you just like, it's the, it's like when we think of like, you know, making our dinosaurs, you know, our dinosaur figurines battle, it's like, uh-huh, the classic Triceratops versus T-Rex.
Yeah, that he started that whole trope.
Yes.
That, where they're mortal enemies.
Yes. That, yeah, that it was like the eternal battle between Triceratops and T-Rex. Like,
yeah,
it started with Charles Knight. And this stance of the T-Rex is like, it's kind of like facing forward. He's leaning, mm-hmm, forward, and the Triceratops is like, don't mess.
Yeah, tail off the ground too.
Yeah. It's, I just noticed there's this, because I haven't seen it in person in a while, there's just like a T-Rex chilling in the background.
It's that guy right, yeah, there. Yeah. Oh, it's that's the Moldorama.
Yeah, yeah. In the color palette to me is just so cool. I think Charles Knight was a little bit of, I've always said it's a reference to Fantasia, which is a direct reference to Charles Knight, but like, mm-hmm, the opening of Dominion, well, like the short film, or it's in the extended edition, but it's like the part that takes place 65 million years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Like that has a very,
yeah,
they're kind of a little bit harsher color wise, but it's kind, mm-hmm, of similar palette that,
yeah,
you know, it's this kind of like these kind of hazy greens and browns, mm-hmm, and pinks and stuff.
I would have loved to see those paintings like when they were like brand new.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Full color.
Yeah.
Because obviously over time these have faded a little bit, but yeah.
Ugh, they're just so beautiful.
They're really, really revolutionary, I would say.
Oh, yeah. The plesiosaurs one and the ichthyosaurs. Those are fun because it's like, that one is kind of I think it's directly across from the mosasaur, the tylosaur and the turtle.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
And like, it's like that, you know, because again, plesiosaur is just one of those like pre-Jurassic Park, mm-hmm, you know, it's a marine reptile, like,
yeah,
classic, like,
mistaken for a dinosaur, yeah, but not, yeah, actually a dinosaur.
And then the ichthyosaurs, which are like the lizard dolphins, because, mm-hmm, they're not dolphins, because they're not mammals, but they basically, it's the convergent evolution thing where it's like, it's useful to be dolphin shaped,
yes,
you know, in time, you know,
if
like,
not dolphin, then why dolphin shaped?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But again, it's like, it just really feels like, you know, you pointed your camera at the ocean where like a bunch of fish were, you know, fighting for food, or, mm-hmm, or, you know, a whale, you know, when you go whale watching or something like that. Because,
mm-hmm,
it's also, it's, you know, it's not just the dinosaurs and marine reptiles and flying reptiles and stuff. It's like cloud work is so detailed and realistic.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I don't know. It's very,
yeah, no, it's amazing. And this man was, again, legally blind.
It's, yeah, he had such a passion for it, you know, that it's that part about it is very inspiring, you know, mm-hmm, that single-mindedness too. It's the wellspring, you know, from which, mm-hmm, so much of our, it's always nice to go back and be like, oh yeah, that's the thing that influenced that thing, that influenced that thing,
mm-hmm,
or whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's kind of like the one that started it.
Yeah.
Started it all and influenced paleo art even into
now. Yeah. And again, it's been nice to go through this book and to be like, he is also somebody that, as much as he didn't play well with others, again, he was just like, because one of the last little tidbits I'll tell you is that in the time that he threw his temper tantrum to leave the Field Museum, his daughter came in and was like, you fools, you know? And so then when it was like, okay, yeah, whatever, like the Field Museum was just like, you're right, we won't tell you what to do or anything like that. Like, we'll just, like, we're not going to mess with, you know, because you've been doing it already and you're so great at it that it's like, why would we? But in between that time, he basically went on a trip to Europe to see, like, what those first, when they first discovered cave paintings, like, in France and stuff. And, mm-hmm, so he just was like, basically broke down and wept at, like, how beautiful it all is, you know? Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I find that very cool, you, mm-hmm, know? You know, cave people were like the first paleo artists, mm-hmm, basically. So, yeah. Is there anything else you wanted to talk about, Andrea?
I think I think that's all of it, right?
Yeah. I mean, again, this wasn't a super in-depth history. I feel like I think we just wanted to gush about Charles Knight and just how special his paintings are and stuff. And again, I think his work is probably just really appreciated on some level because the Field Museum has been able to preserve his legacy without, you know, being like...
having it be like outdated to have like these old, not scientifically accurate in some aspects, paintings hanging around.
Yeah, like acknowledging that, but then...
but it's a piece of history. Yeah. Like it's like it would be a disservice to take them down or replace them with something more up to date. Like it's a piece of paleo history.
Yeah.
And the study of dinosaurs and extinct animals as a whole, because he really like revolutionized how these animals were depicted.
Yeah. Well, and I think we both came to, you know, similar conclusion where it is like, I think why it holds up more than maybe some people's is because it truly just looks like you're just stepped in a time machine and you're like, oh shit.
Yeah.
Better not on anything.
Yeah.
You're like the Simpsons episode, step on a frog. Oh no. I just wanted to admire the dinosaurs.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Andrea.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Where can people follow you, find you?
Strange Word Art, Instagram, mainly Instagram, but also TikTok, Twitter, and Threads. I don't really use Threads that much, though. I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. It's just there, but...
it's there.
Yeah, it's there. I think that's it. If you want to support the rescue we talked about earlier, it's Great Lakes Pigeon Rescue.
Yeah.
They're also Great Lakes Pigeon Rescue on Instagram. You can see all the birds up for adoption.
Help some modern dinosaurs. Help
some modern dinosaurs. They ship if you're in the U.S., as long as it's not like Hawaii or Alaska.
Oh, nice.
They will ship. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Thank you again, Andrea Sciofalo. Really looking forward to Jurassic June this year. We are cooking up something really special for you all. Andrea wanted me to make sure that you all know that the Field Museum expert mentioned in the Chicago Tribune article was John Bates. Whomst is their resident curator of birds. I've linked to the article in the show notes. We had a wonderful time the next day at the Field Museum with Andrea's friend Emma, also hi Sue, and we counted 5 missing paintings from Charles R. Knight's original 28 not on display. Where are they, Field Museum?
What do you know?
Oh, and adjusted for inflation, the $139,000 that Charles R. Knight's daughter Lucy brokered from the Field Museum in 1926 for the paintings would be $2.4 million today. Follow Andrea at Strange Bird Art on everything. Go commission a painting from her. Follow me on Stephen Ray Morris on all things. And if you feel like fighting the algorithm gods with me, please support the show by sharing the post on social, commenting, and consider donating $1 or $5 to me on Patreon. patreon.com/seejurassicright to keep the power on in this park. Hold on to your butts, and I'll see you soon.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.